Okay, I'm recording as well. Shields up, Ironbreakers. We're kind of here coming at you with another episode of the Third Fleet Podcast. How you doing, Gaijin?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I am beyond tired physically and psychologically. It's been...
But you're not sick today, are you?
No, but I've been recovering from sickness. So, you know, it's a little bit of an improvement, but not too much of an improvement. But yeah, it's been one hell of a last couple of weeks, because as we all know, Jeff Keighley, he basically took the ESA out back and shot E3 in the back of the head, and he's done with it.
But did he? We'll get into that.
I think that they shot themselves pretty much, because the ESA has been fumbling around with E3's corpse, just like trying to puppeteer it into something, and they keep messing it up. And
eventually, but June's always such a fun month, isn't it, with games and tech and all that fanfare and all the salty boys in the YouTube comments and the live chats spamming their messages over and over, feeling good at the end of the day.
Oh my God. Yeah, dude. It's like, I think that is the reason why so many people end up in my streams, because like, I'll just ban somebody. I don't care. It's like, hey, you say something I don't like, you're gone. I never have to hear it's from you again. You're just gone.
YouTube is just a bunch of bots pasting the same thing.
Here's an interesting one, right? So we had the Capcom showcase, and for instance, in the Capcom showcase, obviously there wasn't a whole lot to announce, because the two big announcements were revealed first at the PlayStation showcase, which was like Dragon's Dogma 2, and then at the Xbox showcase, which was Kunitsugami. And, you know, there were, I think there might have been one or two more things here or there. So most of the stuff had already been revealed. But, you know, Capcom still wants to do their showcase because, you know, from their perspective, it's like, hey, this is our community and we need to tell them this. We don't know if they watch the Xbox showcase.
Yeah, we need to digest it, you know.
Yeah, exactly. We don't know if they watch the PlayStation showcase, so they can get all things Capcom here. And, so, you know, I was watching the showcase because I did a cons cast with Jono. It was actually yesterday.
I have to watch that. I saw that you had posted that.
Yeah, and so because of that, I was like, let me just rewatch the showcase in preparation. And I went to the official stream. And, you know, usually when I'm restreaming it, I'll have it like full screen, so I don't look at chat. I don't look at their chat. I just look at my chat. This time I didn't. I was just looking through it, and I was looking at the chat, like, oh, my God, dude. I can't even...
It's not just... It's every single live stream from every company is like that. It's ridiculous.
It's like, I can't even begin to imagine... Imagine if you're like a developer, right? And you're excited. Oh my God, my game's coming up. This is going to be great. And then you look at chat and it's a bunch of people just screaming, where's Monster Hunter? Dino Crisis.
Worst show ever. Yeah, go home. They shouldn't have even had a show.
And why'd you even make a show? And I was like, oh my God. Why?
You know what? I don't understand. I understand like if the concept of if like someone like Sony or Microsoft is hyping up their conference, right? And they're saying, hey, you better tune in. And they're hyping big reveals and they don't deliver. Yeah, sure. I could see someone being a little exaggeratory, saying, why'd you even do a show if you had nothing to show? But you get Capcom, who's just like, hey, yeah, it's that time of the year. We're going to showcase, you know, what's going on. And it's like they didn't hype it up. And
yeah, there was almost like no hype around it even. They just it was a couple of days ahead of it. They're just like, oh, by the way, we're doing a showcase.
But people are like,
I didn't even know it was coming.
You shouldn't
until,
show
like,
anything. That mentality.
Yeah, I think that was really weird. I don't understand why people get so upset. And the whole thing about rating the shows as well. Oh, because not even rating. Rating, I think, is fine. You can be like, oh, this show is really good. This show is not as good. But people are just like, this show's terrible. It was so bad. And I'm just left wondering. It's like, look, if there's two or three games that I'm interested, it's a win. If they manage to do one of these shows and there's not one game that I like, then I'll be like, oh, wow, that was impressive. But like, if there's two or three games, I'll be like, hey, that's fine. You know, it was cool. I don't have to like everything. I don't care. It's whatever. But people, they get really obsessed over this and the whole platform wars thing and whatnot. It's been completely insane. But these have been my weeks recently. It's like, and here's another thing, because we started recording the Third Fleet podcast around the COVID days. And during COVID, there was this celebration that was not held in the place that I live. Because where I live, there's this annual celebration which always matches up at the same time as E3, and it's basically a carnival that gets assembled literally in front of my house. Like, like literally you step outside of my apartment building and you're inside the carnival. You can't get away from it. It's right there. And so I had all of these events, things going on in live streams and whatnot. And the second they were over, I'd be like, okay, time to run home, take the kids to the carnival. And I hate the carnival, dude. I hate that place. I'm just like, I'm so done. And my kid's like, let's go do the crazy kangaroo again. I was like, yeah, sure. Bounce. Like, oh my God. Yep.
back in the COVID days, you make it sound like it's over.
Yeah. And exactly. COVID obviously is not over. But like back when everything was closed up and stuff, there was no celebrations. Yeah. There was nothing. And it was insane. But yeah, these have been this last weekend, I went to this social event, the baptism, which is a big deal in Portugal. Whenever somebody gets their child baptized, everybody gets together and there's a big lunch and celebration. I go there and it's the same day as the Xbox showcase. So it's like 5 p.m. Oh. Sorry, bro. Gotta go. Leave. Yep. Go to the showcase. Do the showcase thing. Immediately after that, get on my car, go to the carnival again. It's like I've been living in fast forward for so long. I'm about to just like, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah, it's been a fun month so far, and it's still going. So.
It's been one hell of a year. Even we've been getting a lot of really good games.
Oh man, gamers are eating good this year. For sure.
It's been friggin' fantastic. But and let me tell you a story. This is so good. So we're at the church, the baptism church. And this priest, he just goes and he starts making a car analogy. He's making a car, like he's trying to sell people on the concept of like why you should embrace God and, you know, the usual stuff that priests tend to do, right? Like why religion is this very important thing.
Yeah.
And here's what he says. It's like driving. And I understand that women won't be able to relate to this concept. And everybody in the church was like, what?
What? Oh my gosh.
I looked at my wife and was like, yeah, I know you can't understand this concept.
I mean, I don't know that people would boo in a church, but come on.
I was literally probably one of the maining driving forces to get my wife to go get her license, because she never wanted to get her license. Actually, she's like, oh, I don't want it. And then after I kind of almost forced her to get a license, she won't stop driving the car. She wants to drive everywhere she goes, everywhere, whatever. Because, you know, it's like, how would you say that nowadays? It's just such a weird thing. It's insanity.
That's just so out of what is he, like 90-year-old guy who just lives
no
in his
he actually looked pretty young. He was at least younger than 50 easily. He might have been in his 40s, God. Late 30s, like
that.
I don't
is
know
a, that is a holy cringe.
It's just like, what is going on? That was so weird. But yeah, on top of all of the things, naturally we received the final developer update for Monster Hunter.
You were almost gonna say Finale and Final together. You said Finale.
Yes, the Finale. The best, obviously, the best NPC in Monster Hunter Rise Sunbreak. I mean, hands down, yeah. It is
emphasis,
what it is.
Emphasis on the NP. She's not playable.
I'd love to play with
can't
her.
Can't play
though.
With her. Can't, though. She probably has like bed sores, you know, like when you sit down in the same place for like weeks on end and you can't move in a hospital bed.
Oh,
she's just
God.
Been sitting on that chair the entire time.
No. You don't understand. At night she goes to my room. that's how that works. But yeah, we got the final developer thingamajig, and it was really good to finally see the team again, I felt like, you know?
It was, but I you know what, I have to say this, and it's not a criticism. It's kind of it's in jest in a way, but I really think they need to rethink how they set up their cameras, because like, what the hell is up with some of those cameras? It's like a weird, like, you know, like some stalker put up like a third person camera. they're not looking at it. They're just looking off in the middle of nowhere, and it's just showing that like a corner of their face as they talk. And I'm like, what are they doing? The production team behind that really needs to
artistic.
Figure it out.
You just don't understand. It's art, okay?
Plus, and I think I'm too used to seeing the open letters from Yoshi-P, so I like when they're laid back and they're, which the second part they were more laid back.
Yes.
But I hate that they're so formal in the beginning ones. I wish they would just have more fun with it because what they're doing is so fun.
That was the feedback that I told Jono to give back to the team. It's like, listen, Yoshi-P just grabs out like printouts and he just like shows them to the camera. There's not, they won't even put a JPEG on OBS. It's like, it's too much. No, just grab the printouts, show them the printouts. It does feel more organic when it's like that. But I was just happy that they were chilling
nice
and talking about. It was good. Like I think it's fine to have the voice actors, but I think that having the team there is much more important. Naturally, they're going to be pretty busy people and whatnot. But it was fun to see that, and we got the bonus update, which, as they revealed during that developer update, the game was supposed to end with Amatsu. That was their initial plan, which is weird because now you look at the final cutscenes; they put a lot of work into that final cutscene. I felt.
Yeah, my guess, and I could be completely theorizing here with a tinfoil hat and be completely wrong. But if they decided to add this as a bonus update and they started developing it, it was probably at the start of this year. And what tells me why they might have done that is either A, it's either not ready to be announced, or they decided not to announce Monster Hunter 6 around this time. Because all of a sudden we're seeing early announcements of Dragon Dogma 2, which was surprising for me. Because I think that's going to be after Monster Hunter 6. And also, look at the lineup this summer right now. It is ridiculous. You've got, two or three Final Fantasies coming out this year. You've got all these other huge games.
Rebirth is next year, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, winter timing. But, the marketing campaigns are starting, right? Like, this summer is just, there's so many juggernauts and...
I mean, yeah, you have...
Trying to get the attention is a... It's hard
you have,
right now to
you
get
have
the attention.
Diablo 4, which just came out. You have Final Fantasy 16, which we're going to talk about, which is about to come out. Before that, you had Legend of Zelda: Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah, it's a rough time.
It was a very rough, even for me, because I was going and when I started playing Legend of Zelda, I was like, I need to finish this before Diablo, which should be easy. It wasn't. It was not easy at all.
I'm going to guess it was a wise decision.
Yeah, but I still finished it. I finished that, instantly jumped into Diablo, and then the second I finished Diablo, it was literally like one day I'm wrapping up Zelda, the next day I'm starting Diablo, and then the moment I finished Diablo, the next day I'm covering like Key 3, which is Keeley's E3. It was insanity, absolute insanity. But I also think that...
Which I'm happy with, because this update was freaking awesome, and it's a shame to think that there's a reality in which it wouldn't have come out. I think this was the right way to end it.
Yeah, I think it just made sense for them to end it like that, because there's there's this thing at the... Once you actually beat Primordial Malzino, which, by the way, it's a really great fight, when you actually beat Primordial Malzino, there's just this thing where... They're the cutscene of kind of like mutual respect. We destroy the Curio together, and then Malzino just kind of looks at us and is like, okay, I'm out. We're not fighting today. It was this mutual respect, kind of like a mutual goodbye thing, which I thought was pretty cool.
Or maybe Malzino was just too tired and said, you know what, I'll kill you guys tomorrow.
I'll kill you guys tomorrow. I don't know. The vibe that I got from it was like mutual respect. Basically,
he's probably looking at Ron Dean going like, I've seen you sleep with a plushie of me. I'll leave you be.
I'll see you.
You're my fan
plushie. Yes, but I mean, the plushie that she sleeps with would have been the regular Malzino, so it'd be the one that's afflicted by Curio. Not sure he'd like that.
Yeah,
he'd probably be more upset.
Nah, you're like, she's gonna dye it now all silver.
No, but
not
essentially
blue. So.
Essentially, the whole idea was that Malzino was actually a protector of the kingdom, as opposed to what led
he's
to
a
its
pretty
downfall.
Crappy he's a pretty crappy defender. So, I mean,
he did his best. He did his best, all right? Malzino did his best. They're a bunch of tiny little Curio. They're hard to fight. He needed our help just to survive it time.
It's not the kingdom in his eyes. It's his territory. They just happen to be there. He's not protecting them. He's protecting his turf.
No, he was protecting the kingdom. It was mutual respect.
Anything for Chiche, right? He was protecting Mineo. We'll say that.
Of course, he was protecting Mineo the whole time. He was like, I want to make sure that Mineo is safe so that when Rurikon comes over, it's all good. There are no problems. But
before we go into our impressions of the update, though, there was a few things in that stream I wanted to ask what you thought as well. One was, I was not aware that they were going to do the creators sort of showcase of clips from different creators and stuff. I did not know that was going to be a Twitch only thing.
Me neither. It was actually funny because I thought that was going to be on the YouTube stream, and I'm waiting on the YouTube stream, and Jono sends me a picture of myself on the official Monster Hunter Twitch, and I was like, wait, what? So then I jumped into the Twitch stream to watch that ahead of the official stream. It was really cool. I really liked that. I thought it was a cool community moment. Yeah,
I was really, really happy to be able to participate a little bit in that. But it was nice seeing everybody's videos come together. That's one of those things that you want more and more and more of. It's great.
It was just it just felt like a celebration of the community. You know, it was a really cool moment, and seeing like all of the different people that they had selected in all of their different videos, I thought it was cool.
It was, and then I was surprised. I liked what they did at the end, which is they started showing statistics.
Oh, the statistics from the game. Awesome.
I did not know that they were tracking that stuff, and it was really fun to see.
It's the whole thing of like share anonymous user data that you or not okay.
I love the fact that the gun lance can't even be the best not used weapon. It's the second least used weapon. The lance wins.
Yeah, the lance got us beat there, Gaijin. Yep. It's like you guys win. You suck the best. Good job.
I know. Oh man, but that was really fun to see, and it does show how lopsided some of the usages are. I'm like, come on, people.
And the other thing was, when they showed the most hunted monsters or whatever, my boy Basil was on the list. He was on the list, but then number one was freaking Daimyo Hermitor.
Was there like an event quest that paid out stuff, and that's why?
No, I think it might be because Daimyo Hermitor is the first quest. It's the very first quest that you do in Sunbreak is Daimyo Hermitor. So that, you know, that is obviously going to be one of the most hunted, because some people might start playing the game. They might not like it, whatever, but they'll at least hunt a Hermitor. I don't know. But I'm just thinking about that.
That was surprising because, man, people usually don't like to hunt that guy in games.
I mean, the crabs were pretty fun, I feel like. Particularly, not even Daimyo, but like Shogun for the Charge Blade users. This is something that I mentioned yesterday. It was kind of like their training dummy almost to see. Let's see how high I can make my files go. But yeah, the statistics were cool. I thought it was a really cool showcase overall. And then the update itself, I thought was also pretty nice.
So the update.
I was expecting like a surprise of some kind, but it's like, no, it's just Primordial Malzino. That's it.
Because do you know, did they raise the bonus for anomaly ranks beyond 210?
I still haven't checked the patch notes, and it's not 210, it's 220. It goes all the way to 220. 221.
I'm really hoping at least up to like 270. I hope they boosted it.
If they boosted it, I haven't noticed it, because like I did one hunt against a 2-cart TO who was around my level, which I think was 224 at the time, and I didn't even gain a full level. So I was like, they probably didn't boost it. I asked Jono. He also didn't check the... It's right there on the website, and I still haven't checked it, dude. That's how busy it's...
Yeah, I'm checking it now. I am a little sad that they weren't able to put together the final update same day for the other consoles that recently got Sunbreak.
Yeah, really, I agree.
Disappointing.
They should have done that. Why wait until... It's like the 23rd of August or whatever, which is at the same time as friggin' Armored Core 6 comes out. It's like, come on.
Yeah, I mean, they waited long enough. Yes, they get the superior versions, I mean, outside of Steam. But it's like, come on.
Yeah,
but
I think they couldn't do it,
so.
Yeah.
Kind of a shame.
you're checking to see if they changed anything.
I don't see anything. It just says new monster, paid DLC, event quest. That's it.
Yeah, that was something else that I was telling Jonah yesterday. I was like, listen, you got to tell the team, make this grind a little bit more bearable so that people can do it.
Here we go. Sorry, I had the patch notes now.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure there's nothing. I'm pretty sure there's nothing there. Now that I'm remembering, because I think I did look for it and I couldn't find it. But it could be the case. But either way.
Oh, well.
You know, I jump into the game. We go and we do the Primordial Malzino. And I get, carded in the first couple of minutes. Just like, so you were watching. You were watching, actually.
Yeah, I was watching, yeah.
I had carded right at the start. And everybody in chat was saying, oh, at least two carts. Nah, he's going to triple cart. And then I was like, nah. Mm-mm.
Nah, you had it.
I carded once and that was it. And that was because... The reason I carded was because I thought I had guard up in my set and I didn't. And I wasn't prepared for some of the attacks that he was doing. But again, there's attacks that I can't block with guard up. It's like, I don't know. There should be something there. Because a lot of times it almost feels like guard up is a trap. There's always been stuff that you can't
guard. You know
guard,
what they should have done?
But I feel like he does a lot. That there's at least two or three attacks that he does that you can't guard.
I think in the future, if... What they could have done is if he's about to do an attack that is completely unguardable, they say like, watch out or something like
to let you know that you can't guard it.
Yeah, like, okay, this is the danger.
It's straight up a trap for people that use shields. It's just straight up a trap because I'll be like, oh, here comes the thing. I'll just block that. Oh, wait, never mind.
Yeah, it gives me flashbacks of Dalamadur. I don't think you were able to guard your way through its laser. I think you all had to do the Superman.
Superman dive for the win.
Woo!
He's a really aggressive. He's a really aggressive monster. One of the more aggressives. I think that people who try fighting him at Master Rank 10 are probably going to have a bad time. I expected him to be like Master Rank 200, to be honest. Or at least 100, but they're like, nope, here it is. It's all good. Master rank 10.
You know what I was surprised by? When we killed it, we get in there, and I had one cart in the middle, and it was just, I got slammed up against the wall and couldn't get out. And I noticed at that point, I'm like, wait a second, Yuna hasn't carted yet, and she has not done anything beyond MR, 30. Like, she's never done anomaly investigations. She's never upgraded or augmented anything. Though. Yeah, she's just playing better. But then she carded, and then I laughed really hard.
Oh, that's not fair. You laughed really hard.
But it's like, I'm playing with 1,000 defenses. She's playing with, 700, if that. It was like, wow, you're good. Good at avoiding stuff. She was hunting horning it. She said it was very fun against it. I actually swapped out... I did Sword and Shield first, but I found it a little difficult, so I went to Lance, of all things, and man, that thing is fun to Lance.
Yeah, I heard it's really comfy with the Lance, but you still get
just
hit
by those...
two
Lancers going at it. You're just jousting each other.
Yeah, but you can still get hit by those that laser barrage that he does, which I need to get better at identifying.
Yeah, but you've got that skill with Lance, so that allows you to zip to the other end of Narnia, basically.
Oh, right, yeah.
It's the moment you see something, you can go straight to him, straight behind him, and be like, "See ya." It's totally fine.
I mean, I can try to blast dash, but the setup for that, I dodged a lot of stuff with reverse blast dash in a lot of situations, but the range on it is not. It's not super extensive. Like, it is pretty decent, but sometimes, depending on the position, you can get caught off guard from it.
Yeah. I do need to play it more, though. I really want to get its armor set, and I want to upgrade it and make it, my set, so to say, because that's the final monster, so you kind of always want to do that. And I have three of the pieces. I'm still missing the legs and the boots.
I think that one of the cool things that they did with Malzino's armor set is that it didn't feel like the Fatalis armor set. And I think that's one of the best things they could have done. Because
it was broken in terms of the slots, but not overall. Like, the skills it had and the overall balance of it was not that bad.
And the set bonus that it gives, the unique skill, It didn't really strike me as like, oh, I need to get this right now. As a matter of fact, I didn't even craft it because I was like, no, I like having scent a lot. I like having infinite sharpness. It's fun. Infinite sharpness and resharpen whenever I switch skill swap and do all these things. No, I like this. This is very comfy, very nice. I'll stay with this one. Thank you. But the looks, I crafted the layered armor set straight up, and I'm using that one right now. Like, it looks nice. Really good. I like it a lot. Even with the default colors, I didn't even change the colors. I'm just like, I like this. And then I put, obviously, the Caravaneer hat, because that's pretty much mandatory. Yeah. That's just the way it goes. But, yeah, I crafted that, layered, crafted that. And I was looking through all of the weapons, and, oh, man, it felt so good.
Gunlance.
To finally, for once, because, like, I always do the
is
thing.
Is it level 8?
It is a level 8.
Oh,
when I was going
shit.
Through the reveal,
wait, hang on. Is it
like,
long?
No, it's not long. It's normal, but I've been playing normal.
Ooh,
I've been playing normal, so it's fine. I was like, yep, this is fine. Normal is what I've been playing. I instantly crafted it. Now I just need to... The problem is, in order to use it, I first need to get to 241 because I need to get expert plus 2 decos.
Ah.
Because if I don't get expert plus 2 decos, that Gunlance is still losing out to Pyarachnikodaki because it comes... Here's the thing. They're very close in terms of performance. Like, at least in my opinion, there's probably like, you know, meta players and whatnot. No, this one's actually better because of whatever. But like, the thing is, because that one has element, when you know how when you upgrade the weapon to get more slots, you now get more attack and more sharpness and all of that. But because that one has more element, it gets less raw in those upgrades because the upgrades go... More raw, more element, and more. Whereas the Torsi Lava True, the Pyarachnikodaki one, it's just like raw, more raw, more raw. So they actually end up being pretty close in terms of raw damage. The difference is that the other one just has so many friggin' slots that it is completely insane. And it also comes with dragon damage, so stuff that is weak to dragon is also going to take more damage from that. So, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm definitely going to be using it. And it was one of the first times that I got to like go, oh, Capcom learned how to count to 8. That's impressive. Look at you. But yeah, that was the Gunlance. That was the event. They released a Hazard version of Malzino. You should get Unit.
Oh, yeah. I did that. I did that right after. That is much more fun.
Did you beat
story
it?
One. Yeah.
I haven't beaten it yet.
Nah,
it was two of you, right? It was 2-on-1. Hmm? Or did you go solo?
Solo. I did it.
Damn.
I tried online, but like 3 times everyone's just dying, so I just did it solo.
Oh yeah.
I didn't
I'm
follower.
Not surprised.
Because I was lancing, so I didn't want the attention to be brought on anybody, but I did bring my cat. So
yeah, of course. I always bring my two cats. You kidding me? They have to be a part of the hunt.
That was a fun hunt.
That was a fun hunt. It was a nice way to kind of like sunset, Monster Hunter Rise, Sunbreak. That is pretty much done in terms of development. There's still the grind to do for people that never really got through the whole grind thing. But the good thing about it is that all of the events are still available. There are still events coming until the 27th of July. So... there's still stuff coming, but it's basically the team is now, we're slowing down. We're going to go into the next Monster Hunter game. So what do you think about it now that Sunbreak is done? Kind of.
I mean, I felt this way for a long time, but I mean, I have nothing but fond memories of this generation, and especially Rise, Sunbreak. They did something that was... I mean, there's questionable things, like whether you like the tempo and the pacing of Iceborne or whether you prefer the more high-paced action. But like we said from the beginning, if they were going to try taking a different approach because it's a good time to try something new, like go all in, and that's exactly what they did. Like they went all in. And I think they got a lot of learnings from it, and it's going to be really interesting to see which parts of this they'll bring into the next generation, which ones they won't, which ones they'll iterate on. I'm not sure. But it was certainly fun and different, so I give it that. And I'm still surprised this day how it runs on the Switch. It's like Zelda. It's black magic.
It's like some really strange black magic for sure that they got
it's
going.
It's really
there.
Good.
It runs.
It feels
really
good.
Smooth. Yeah, I prefer playing it on the Switch. even, because the art style just feels like it suits the Switch better. But, you know, play
yeah,
whatever platform you want.
Yeah, it's a weird
thing.
I know. I don't know what it is, but I have the same thing where sometimes I prefer one game on one platform for the other, and I don't really know why. It just, there's something about it that just feels right. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. But, yeah, that's Monster Hunter Rise. Sunbreak, what are your predictions in terms of when we're going to see the reveal of Monster Hunter 6 at this point? Because everybody is still saying Tokyo Game Show. Because Ryozo did say it at some point in some interview that, like, in terms of Monster Hunter news, look forward to Tokyo Game Show.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, he did say it. That's
Tokyo
the thing.
Tokyo Game Show is as bad as E3 had become in the recent years, honestly. Like, I don't even... the only reason to go to those is to meet friends and developer friends. Like, going there... I would never go there as a consumer. And they haven't made any big announcements at all in years at that thing. It's just a literal trade show. And they're just... It's a good meeting space for devs to meet each other. And then there's the games. Which, if you don't line up for 5 hours or whatever, you're not going to get the tickets to play that day.
That's always such a weird thing for me, the concept of somebody going to a trade show to line up for 5 hours. I remember the first time that I went to E3. I remember seeing lines, and the lines would say, from this point on, it is 6 hours wait time. And I was like, what the hell is this line for? So I go to the front of the line just to see what it was for. It's going to blow your mind. It was to watch a Destiny trailer.
Oh, good God.
A trailer. Okay. You could have just put a screen outside and let people watch the damn thing, and they wouldn't have to wait for friggin' 6 hours to go watch it. It's just such a weird...
You know, my favorite memory, though, of Tokyo Game Shows is probably when they did a Capcom announcement, like a live thing that they did, and Ryozo made mention of me without saying my name. He's like, man, there was this guy who was doing the demo, and he, in like 2 minutes into the demo, he quit out of the quest and go in with a new weapon. He was just trying out all the different stuff. I'm like, yeah, that was me. As he came over my shoulder, and he was laughing because I kept resetting the game in the middle of my 10-minute demo so I could try as many weapons as I could. And that was for Cross, I think it was. And it was, that was really funny.
He just kept resetting the quest. He's crazy.
But I mean,
this person's insane.
Think about it. Like Tokyo Game Show is in like what, September? They haven't really announced anything big at that point. It's going to be the peak before holidays. I don't see them really doing much of anything there.
I think
the Game Awards in December seems like perfect timing.
I don't know, because I feel like Game Awards feels a little bit late. The perfect timing, I feel, would be Gamescom. Gamescom's coming up. I believe it's at some point in August. And that would be like the perfect timing for them to eventually release it before March, because you'd get like six to seven months.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to go do it before March. Like I said before, like seeing them all of a sudden showing off Dragon's Dogma 2 really early peak, that was really shocking. But
yeah, that's the weird part, because like you keep thinking that they're going to release the next Monster Hunter before Dragon's Dogma, but what if they don't?
Oh, yeah.
What if Dragon's Dogma 2 gets released before Monster Hunter 6? What if Monster Hunter 6 is not releasing next year, which is what we all think?
What if Dragon's Dogma 2 is not releasing next year?
Yeah, that's the thing, because Dragon's Dogma 2 didn't even get like a release date.
I mean, think about it. Like, they pulled the carpet under his legs when he made the first game, right? Like, they had to rush and cut a bunch of stuff and just kind of slop it together at the end. And they did a fantastic job.
Oh,
but
yeah.
They were limited. Now, with his success of Devil May Cry, I'm sure Itsuno-san has got the resources that he wants to make the game. And he said it's going to be 4 times larger.
The map, like, is going to be 4 times larger. The funny thing was, when people have been telling me, like, in my comment section, well, the map of Dragon's Dogma is not that big. And I was like,
4 times. What? Yeah, go run around it.
Not that big? Like, what are you talking about?
I mean, it's not as much of a walking simulator like Elden Ring or something is, right? Like, there's...
Yeah, of course.
There's not patches of 30 minutes of walking and nothing occurring. So it's a very dense and eventful map, I think.
But
4 times just sounds huge.
I'd still... I'd still say it's big. It's not like the biggest map ever, but it's still big. Like, I don't think you can say, oh, it's not that big. It's like, what the hell are you talking about? And this is without even taking, taking into account Dark Arisen.
Yeah. I think if you wanted to run from Karsus or whatever, the beginning village, all the way up to the upper right where there's the tower, the mage tower, I would imagine that would take you, God, with no teleports and trying to fend off enemies. Ignore all that, just running. I almost want to try it now, but I imagine it would take something like 20 minutes.
Yeah. I could see that. Maybe even more, because you have to go through the cliffs still, and the cliffs is like
a winding path. Yeah, and that's a real bitch.
Yeah, so I think the map is pretty big, and with it being announced, it's going to be four times bigger. It's going to be completely insane. What did you think of the gameplay that we've seen so far? Like, just the other day, I released like a 1-hour video.
You know what I'm happy about? What it did was send a straight message to, I think, fans of the first game, because I think most people look at it, they're like, okay, whatever, it looks like Dragon's Dogma. Like, they don't know what they're being shown, but for, I think, diehard fans of Dragon's Dogma 1, there's certain things that we want them to evolve and certain things we don't. Like, for example, you know, coming out and saying, hey, it's going to be single player. It's going to be focused on the pawns. Thank God. Like, that
See, I'm of the different opinion. I thought the reason why it was focused on pawns initially, I thought it was a limitation of the hardware. I thought it was like, oh, this combat is amazing, and they probably couldn't make this combat work with four players, and that's why we're getting this pawn system. But clearly that's not the case. It was a design decision.
I think the pawn system is one of the most interesting game systems in any game I've played. I really like it.
I think you could have both. You could have the pawn system, and you could have co-op. I would have loved to see Dragon's Dogma Online in the West, but they never released it, and I'm not going to be playing the Japanese version.
People who played it here liked it, but there wasn't that many subscribers. I think Dragon's Dogma works better as a single-player experience because it's in direct conflict with the pawn system if you don't.
Yeah,
the whole point of the pawn system is sharing. I mean, weird, like, From Software kind of, like, indirect co-op where you're getting hints, you're getting things, you're seeing stuff of other players, but it's not them, and it's cool.
It's like the thing is, you could have like, say, just 2-player co-op and each player would have their pawn and off you go. You could do that. That could have been a thing. But that, I don't know. Here's the thing. I'm not against it being full single player. I just would have liked to have seen co-op because it always felt to me like this was a game that was almost designed to be co-op. But clearly that was not the case. And I was completely wrong in my initial assessment of the original Dragon's Dogma because I just thought it was a hardware limitation. But it is clear now that, no, this is a design decision. We want you guys to play with a pawn system. That is integral to the game. And I was like, all right, now that's fine. I'll enjoy it either way. Yeah. Don't worry about that.
And, well, think about this. It's running on the RE engine, and we just got an iteration of cooperative AI, which was fantastic with the follower system in Monster Hunter. I'm sure they're picking that team's brains and sharing that knowledge of how to have really sophisticated followers.
They already said that they're improving the AI of the followers, which is good because a lot of times in the original Dragon's Dogma, you'd have followers just doing completely ridiculous things. Like sometimes you'd have followers climb up into the monsters and then just like stay there for a while and just like a spider crawling around the monster and then jumping off and doing nothing. And you're like, what was that? What were you doing?
Yeah.
What is your thought process there? Walk me through that.
Some of my favorite memories in Dragon's Dogma is just some of the weird situations that came up with the pawns. And how you learn to work with them and co-op together, so to say. And if they're going to be smarter and more interesting, that's going to just be so good. So to me, it was like just confirming, yes, we're focused on pawns, single player. This is a tenet of this title. That made me so happy. And the second thing is they confirmed.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I'm bulldozing here.
No, it's fine. It's the delay, dude. But go ahead.
Yeah. I really love that they confirmed that there will be new vocations because the game had a crap ton of variety to begin with. Because unlike Monster Hunter, like this is a game where like as you learn vocations and you learn the new skills, you can then apply them to other, like your passives to other jobs or other vocations. So like the combinations are kind of crazy. And if they're expanding on that, I'm excited. Yeah. And they also confirmed, you know, there's going to be some more world building. Like They'll have the new animal race. I don't know if that's from Dragon Saga Online. Beastren. But that's nice to see from our variety. And yeah, it confirmed it was on the RE engine. Like, what else do I need? And then they showed a picture of what the Black Mage casting, technically a low level fire spell, but like the big comets come out of the sky, showing like, okay, they know.
It's probably just like a regular bolide. Yeah.
Yeah. They know exactly that the best in industry magic is in Dragon's Dogma, and they're gonna
The thing that is interesting is the whole thing about the map size and RE engine. Like, this is 100% going to be the biggest maps you've ever seen in RE engine. This is the real test of like, oh, let's see what RE engine can really do. Because like up until this point, you have the Resident Evil remakes. Technically speaking, from a scope perspective, those maps are somewhat limited.
Closed,
you look
yeah.
at the you look at the maps of even Monster Rise Sunbreak. These are big maps, but they're not nearly as big as something like the Dragon's Dogma map. And he just straight up was like, "It's going to be four times the size of the Dragon's Dogma map." And you're like, "Okay, that's friggin' insane," because like it's going to be a huge map. It's going to be the biggest map that they've ever done in RE Engine. And I've always thought that because of the way in which RE Engine was used for the Resident Evil games and even for Rise Sunbreak, I always thought it's like, this is a really good engine, but it has limitations in terms of scope. And if they pull off Dragon's Dogma 2, that's just going to shatter that expectation that I had of any limitation of the RE engine. It's like, no, it's just a huge, massive, sprawling map, and it just works. I'm going to be like, bro, that's wild. That's freaking crazy. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hyped.
The other
but
thing,
I still think it's very far away. I do not yeah. expect to see it in like for another 2 years, which is fine.
Yeah,
like, let it cook.
The thing was, it didn't have a date, and my conclusion was, if you were watching the Capcom showcase, they showed that game Pragmata, and Pragmata was apparently originally supposed to be released in 2022, and then it got delayed for 2023. No, was it 2023? I don't remember, because they did the thing where they showed it's supposed to be released here, then it got delayed to 2023, and now they're scratching 2023, and the next date is very sorry. It's like, there's no next date, right? And I think that might be the reason why they're like, look, we've already given dates for this other game, and that didn't work out. We're not going to give a date for Dragon's Dogma 2 until we're very yeah. close to be ready to launch, which I think is smart. I think it's smart of them to play it like that. That might also be the reason why they haven't announced anything new in regards to Monster Hunter. They're like,
yeah, and again, why should they, right?
Yeah.
This is the industry is having a ball right now with big releases. Like, they don't, this is not the time for them to try to muscle their way into the bar, you know?
I think the best way to do it really is a 6 month cycle. It's like, you announce yep. it 6 months ahead of time. You got 6 months for a marketing campaign, and then boom, it releases and it's done. Because that feels so much better than games that just go like, oh yeah, we announced yeah. this like 10
so
years ago.
I'm updating my prediction here.
It's coming out now.
My prediction is game show December announcement, summer 2024 for Monster Hunter 6.
You mean,
6 months, it'll be perfect.
Not game show, game awards.
Game awards, yeah.
Because like game show is like Tokyo
oh,
Game
no, no,
Show.
Oh, No. The Game Awards, because the West is the biggest market for Monster Hunter right now, even though Japan is super strong. The West pulls big numbers, and they're going to be hoping to cash in on that investment from Iceborne.
Yeah,
so.
That's what I was telling people, and there's a lot of people that are giving me pushbacks. Like, he already said that he's announcing it on Tokyo Game Show, and I was like, I'm not saying that is not a possibility.
Find out where...
It is completely possible that he is announcing it at the Tokyo Game Show, but I will say that I think that is a massive step backwards for the franchise. If he's, because like, very few people from the West follow Tokyo Game Show. Let's just be completely and utterly real. Almost nobody in the West follows the Tokyo Game Show. So unless they, although, think of it like this. Think of it like this. What if they announce it at the Tokyo Game Show, and then they hold their own event for the West? They hold like their own dedicated Monster Hunter, like a developer diary type thing for the, you know what? Actually, that would actually be really good. For me, that'd be fantastic. I'd be like, oh, a Monster Hunter developer diary, you say? Well, yes, I will stream that.
I kind of want to figure this out why we're streaming, because it's from a Famitsu article. So I could just buy the Famitsu right now digitally and look at what he actually said in Japanese.
Oh my God, that is not a good idea.
Distill the nuance from it. But this was back in December 29th. But they don't show what...
Okay, tell you what. How about you go ahead and you look that up, and we actually pause the podcast so that you can look that up, and we'll give you guys the information when we come back.
Yes. Wait for the magical delay. In 3, 2, 1. Hey, and thanks to the power of editing, we are back, and I actually found it. So this is actually one of the series that I like to poke fun of every year in Japan. Famitsu says, we're going to ask the developers, you know, what did you think about, what's your key word for this year? What was your biggest memory, and what are you playing, and what are you looking forward to? And it's always like 140 people and like 5 women. I'm like, really? There's so many amazing like women developers out there, and they can only find like 5, and it's the same 5 every time. Like, come on.
The same 5? So it's impressive.
Most of the time, yeah.
It's good job security.
It's horrible. I hate it. So basically, they bring in 140 well-known devs of various different disciplines, and they ask them the same thing. What's your keyword for 2023? What are you looking forward to in 2023? Like, what's your mission statement? What have you been up to? And then they say, you know, what's going on for next year? So I found Tsujimoto. He was the number 32. They interviewed him. It's actually on their website. And they say... what's the keyword for the coming year, 2023? He says continuation, of course. 2023, he says, you know, what would you like? And he's like, well, it's been several years since I've been able to go to any events. So, you know, it would be nice to go to events and meet people in 2023, both domestically and internationally. I think that's a shared sentiment amongst a lot of developers. What you up to lately? And he's like, we've already announced it, but we've got a free update coming to Sunbreak in the winter of 2020. We have a free title update planned for 2023 sometime between for both winter and spring, and we hope you look forward to it. And then they say, of all the things that you're, you know, what are you looking forward to in 2023? Whether it be like, you know, any form of entertainment, it doesn't have to be games. And he says Tokyo Game Show. And you're telling me that that is the...
I don't know.
Oh, my God. Tsujimoto saying that Monster Hunter 6 coming to Tokyo Game... He just said he hasn't been able to go to any physical events.
I don't know if that's the one that people are claiming, because I haven't seen it.
It is.
Because it is? You sure?
Yes.
I mean, if that's the only thing, that doesn't seem like proof that Monster Hunter is getting announced at Tokyo Game Show.
People run with that. I mean, he just said that, and even Yoshi-P said the same thing. Like, I want to go to events. I want to meet people.
Of course.
I want to do things.
That's the same way that I feel. I want to go to events too and meet people, but, you know, I can't. So.
Yeah. So the fact that he would say Tokyo Game Show, because I think they are going to have a physical event this year. Like, that makes sense that he'd be looking forward to that. But it doesn't mean, oh, yeah, baby, we're announcing Monster Hunter 6 at that event.
But like I said, I think there's still potential for it to be announced. I mean, look, these
are the three... Of course, yeah.
These are the three events that we have, which are the potential things. I think that announcing it at Tokyo Game Show is a massive step backwards. I think the Game Awards is the biggest step up for the franchise to be announced that. But, you know, it is what it is. We'll see what they do.
But like everybody in these interviews, they're not trying to tease PR. Like even Suzuki-san, the director of Sunbreak, they asked him the same question. He's like, oh man, I haven't really been able to dive into entertainment yet. I want to watch movies. Like, I can't wait for like the Kamen Rider, Marvel, Indy Jones, Paddington and other movies like that. So they're all just giving like whatever answers. This is not an article where people try to tease or hype anything up. So I that's funny.
Yeah.
Okay, well that you heard it here. It's not that it's not possible, it's just I don't think it's likely, but who knows?
We'll see. I think again
ask me in October.
The thing that I always say is I just think it'd be a massive step back for the franchise to do it like that.
I think it would be a horrible mistake.
You always want to go for a stage that has more reach than what you do. And you
look
know,
what
Capcom,
happened when they did that with World.
Yeah, exactly. Capcom has a lot of reach, especially now that, you know, Monster Hunter is much more popular and all of these things. They do have reach, but I feel like they don't have the same capacity to reach an audience as something like the Video Game Awards or the even Gamescom. Although Gamescom, I don't know, because Gamescom's not as mainstream. It's like it's a much more... I don't know how to explain it. You do have like a keynote event that they do around Gamescom, which is, curiously enough,
like
also hosted by Keeley. It's also Keeley. At least last couple of times, I think it was Keeley. Keeley goes in there and he does the thing. Keeley is just like synonymous with video game events nowadays. It is what it is. He's Mr.
Hey, he's
video Game
Man.
But I think the Video Game Awards is what would make the most sense for them straight up. But we'll see if that is the case or not. But yeah, that's that. Another thing that was shown, and this was at the Xbox showcase, was Kunitsugami. What'd you think about that?
Oh, it looked like interesting. I don't know. I didn't know what to feel from it. I mean, it looks cool. It's one of those things. I think it's so specifically aesthetic that if the style doesn't grab you at the first time, you kind of just gloss it over. And if people start playing, oh man, this is a really good game, then you would look it up. But visually, it didn't really necessarily catch me.
It didn't instantly grab you. I think it looks interesting, and also because it looks like it's got some co-op in there, and I'm just like a sucker for co-op. So I'm hoping that is the case, but we don't know much. I was trying to like probe Jono yesterday, and he's like, no, I'm not telling you anything. I was like, okay, fine, be that way.
So, trying to get a man fired.
Yeah, I wasn't trying to do that. But so you you said you wanted to talk to me about Tears of the Kingdom. So I guess
yes,
we could talk about that.
I thought I would never get to talk to you about it because I thought you would never like see the ending of the story.
I finished it before you did.
Did you though?
Yes, because I saw your tweet of when you finished the game. You made a tweet where you said something like, oh,
yeah, we put it off. We weren't going
to
do it.
We beat Ganon or whatever. And I was like, oh, welcome to the club. I was thinking to myself, welcome to the club.
Yeah, we put it off, but we decided, you know what? We may as well just go and see. We're not going to stop playing the game, but you may as well go see the ending before FF16 comes out. So we did that, and I'm happy we did it on my game.
We're not, by the way,
we're not going to be spoiling
the story or anything like that. So just
nothing.
Yeah, but keep going. Yeah. So both of you were playing
it. I'll just say the ending was a lot harder than I thought it would be. Like it was a good challenge. It was satisfying for me, but then again, I don't know what you went in there with. So what are you laughing at?
Just don't watch my stream of what I did at the end.
You cheesed them
in the worst possible, not even the worst possible way, but pretty close.
Yeah, I mean, I ended up doing probably what you did, but it took me a good while of trying to figure out the authentic way to proceed, and I gave up and just cheese killed him.
No,
it was probably the same spot.
No, it was.
I'll give you one hint without spoiling it. It's kind of the same way I took care of Bitter Black Isles.
Boss. Yeah, yep. That's pretty much it. Yep. Yep. That sounds about right.
My God, what a game.
But wait. I immediately went back and I did it again normally, and I one-shotted it well. So, but my character, I was pretty strong by then, so it's like, it's whatever. But the interesting thing was what I did before that. And the thing that comes before that, I made a tank, a big laser.
Oh, you're
tank.
A machine maker.
Yeah, dude, I love that. I was running around my tank, bzam, bzam, just like deleting everybody. Woo, bzam. I made so many crazy machines. Like to give you an idea, right? Did you guys fight the baddest Gliok in the game? The Glioks are the three-headed dragons.
I did, yeah.
So the way that I had planned to do that was I grabbed a stake, right? You know, the stake thing that you can stick it on walls and stuff. I grabbed that. I glue a wheel on it And then I put a ton of the laser heads, the Kirin heads. I call them Lord. Kirin heads. I put as many as I could glue on that thing. And then I put that stake in a position. And then I'm just like, hey, come here. Come here, King Gliok. Shot that thing. The thing, you turn it on, it starts spinning. It's like, it deleted one third of his health in record time. But then the boss just goes like, brah, and it deletes everything. I was like, bro, that sucks. That sucks. This is so bad.
I was gonna say the hardest thing about that fight was getting to his island. So
island.
But then again, you know what? I don't craft much.
He's not in an island though.
The Gliok God, yeah, he is. He's on a floating island. Are you sure you fought the god and not just one of the
people? Were telling me that the hardest one was King Gliok.
There must be more than one in the game then, because the one that I faced
the one that
twice
I faced
in
was
areas,
in
but
the
one I faced was a
was
floating
in the
island. It's really hard to get to.
The one that I faced was in the underground zone. I did all of the underground zone, by the way. I did all of it.
Oh, interesting. Nice. Yeah.
People in my chat were telling me that one was the hardest one. So I don't know.
Interesting.
I don't know if
I faced him in the overworld, so that's probably our difference.
Yeah, but like I loved the game. The game is friggin' phenomenal. I cannot say good things enough about it. And one of the biggest things for me is like this game came after Jedi Survivor, just to give context, right? Jedi Survivor's game costs $70. Zelda's a game that costs $70. These two games could not be further apart in terms of quality, in terms of how good the story was, in terms of all the things you can do in the game. They're both also, technically speaking, kind of like open world games. And it's like, no, bro, no, listen. If your game costs $70, you need to justify it, and it needs to measure up to something like Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. Like, I'm sorry. It's just like, it is what it is. It doesn't have to be exactly like it. It doesn't have to be as good as it. But there needs to be at least an effort to get that level of polish, which is something that I feel they didn't really do for like Jedi Survivor or whatever. But yeah.
I don't know. It's just, this is like, it was like, what was it? Quarantino had that interview. He was discussing like the perfect movie. He's like, look, you can nitpick it, but it's like it delivers on everything. Like, it's just, it's perfect at what it goes for. Like, this is like the perfect game. You can nitpick it, but to me, this is 11 out of 10. It's so insane.
I absolutely loved every moment that I've played of that game. It was just a blast. Like, I keep going to the depths, exploring the depths, finding all of the light flowers, doing all of the little side quests that you could do in the underground, and going to all of the mines and collecting all of the, not even all of the secret armors. I tried collecting a lot of secret armors, but I ended up just focusing on one, which was the armor from the very first Zelda I ever played, which is Twilight Princess. So I just got that armor, upgraded it to like level 2 so that I could get the bonuses and whatnot. And then I beat the final boss using the Twilight Princess armor set. And I was like, yes. Exactly.
Oh, I was
what
cheap.
I
was Fierce Deity, fully upgraded, 60 defense.
Fierce Deity? I don't even know what that is. Is that from the amiibo?
Anything in the amiibos you can get in the game. So
yeah, but I heard people talk about that armor. What's the bonus of the Fierce Deity armor?
It's just attack up level 3.
Oh, okay. So that's not that big of a deal. I think that mine also would give, if I was upgraded all the way, it would also do that.
That's like, what, 40% damage increase, I think, or 60?
I don't know. I was dealing massive amounts of damage, because I basically merged the Master Sword with like a Lynel part, like a silver Lynel part or whatever, so it was just massive amounts of damage.
What I do is I put it on the Garuda Scimitar, because the legendary one that you can get in the game. It's a whole side quest, but
all
the Gerudo weapons will double the bonus that you get from a fusion. So it's like 160
or
something
pretty
crazy.
Busted. But at the end of the day, it's very much like Monster Hunter in terms of balancing. The bow beats everything that you do. It's like, forget about it. You
just
grab
love
a bow,
how the game,
boom, done.
Like, how do you design a game in which the player can practically do anything from a very early point, and still it's challenging and fun and creative? It's ridiculous. And they don't even care if you break the living hell out of it. That's the point. It's like, you use your imagination. You got through it. Good for you.
Have
like,
you
it's
seen,
not a hack.
Have you seen what some of the players are doing with the combat system, like midair surfing with rocket shields?
Oh yeah, they did that whenever with the first game. It was crazy.
Whenever I see somebody do that, I was like, bro, I want to do that, but I can't do that.
We're playing a different game. I can't do that.
We're playing a very different game. But I loved using the I love using the Zonite stuff. As a matter of fact, I got the full Zonite set and I had it upgraded. And I would, for a while, I was even running with like, no, this is my gun lance. It'd be like any Zonite handle that I'd grab, I'd stick a cannon on it. And it's like, my gun lance. But very much like in Monster Hunter, the shelling doesn't scale, so it sucks.
Oh, man. But I'm really happy that we did buy two copies, one for me and one for Yuna, because the way we play the game is so incredibly different. And it's so fun watching, like, what the hell is that? Like, I haven't discovered that yet.
And, yeah, I can imagine, because, like, I kept running into things that I'd be like, what is that? How did I get here? Yeah, like,
from
what the
a
hell?
Programming perspective, like, their physics engine is on another planet. Like, oh, my God.
And you didn't even build that many machines. You have no idea the crazy stuff that I built, dude. I was doing something.
I'm just talking about, like, the stuff that you get in some of the, just watching some of the various physics things interact. It's ridiculous.
It's
so good.
Beautiful. It's gorgeous. Like I had so many crazy machines that I was always doing to kill stuff faster. But it is one of those things where I feel like a lot of this machinery that I've created, if they do a master mode like they did for Breath of the Wild, it will not work. It just straight up will not work. It won't work because of the regen, because of the health that the monsters have. So yeah, it makes me a little bit sad.
Hmm. This is a game that I can confidently say if they wouldn't, but let's just say a theoretical, it was released on PC and I could play it in 120 FPS. I wouldn't redo it. Like the thing is it's so smooth and fun. I mean, there are hitches, of course. There's some areas that destroy
some areas.
The FPS, like there's no, but the most part it's very comfortable and the frame pacing's good. I don't feel like it got in the way of anything. Like if anything, it's I wish I took more pictures or something as I played the game and documented my journey through it.
Yep, like, agreed. I should have taken more pictures too. That's something that I didn't do as much. But
hindsight is 20/20, right?
Yeah, but I was happy that like I made a video where I said that I wasn't going to be doing a full playthrough, which I didn't. And I was happy because like those first moments of discovery would have been absolutely ruined by constantly forcing myself to go forward. And then eventually, once I got to grips, I was like, okay, now I'm comfortable enough where I feel like I can stream without feeling constricted in what I'm doing. And then I just went ahead and I streamed and just for fun and whatnot. And it was so good. It was so much fun, especially like depth exploration. That's what I did the most. Did you finish the depths map?
I have not yet. So there's lots of this fun stuff
I
to look forward
grabbed
to.
Grabbed all of the light.
I've only
roots,
I only grabbed 36 out of 120, so I still got a ways to go.
Yeah, it was good. I will say one of the things that they definitely could have improved is the Sage controls. Sage controls are terrible.
There's something that I read, and if it's true, I'm going to kick myself in the arse for it. But apparently, because you know, like if you have one or two of them, or like sometimes they run off and they're doing their stuff and it's really hard to catch up to them and stuff. I read that if you do the horse whistle, that they'll come right to you. If that's the case, then I've been doing it wrong for hundreds of hours.
Yeah, that would be
I want to test
as
that
well.
Out.
I wasn't aware of that because it was very frustrating. Like, oh, I need this specific thing. And they're all like clumped up doing things and I'll activate every single power and send the Goron guy flying all the time.
Yeah.
What a downgrade, by the way, going from the Rook to Yunobo. Oh. No,
yeah,
bro.
I got my Thunder Goddess. I can care less about everything
else.
Man, Zelda,
Daruk.
I will throw Zelda off the aisles to be
bro.
With.
The things that Zelda went through in this game, I don't want to say it, but goddamn,
no,
dude,
don't say
you can't
it.
You can't do that to Zelda. You can't do her dirty dude. Like that. Come on.
Niju is the bomb. She was such a dorky, weird-looking kid in the first game. 10 years later, she's in her 20s. She's a goddess. Oh my god. She's so badass. The way she sees her swords, the way she looks, the voice, everything is just that's Max waifu for me. I'm sorry. But the bird boy I love to death. He's so great.
What's his? I forget his name.
Tupin.
Tupin? No, it's not. Is it? I don't know. I forget. Dude, everything is just like looped together in my mind, and I've been like sleep deprived on top of it. It's great. It's fantastic.
Tulin.
Yes, that's
he's him. Awesome.
He's actually one of the better ones because Is Special, at least. I mean, it's a double-edged sword. Is Special, whenever you're in the air, you can always get it off. It's great, fantastic. But when you're picking up items, you also always get it off, and you'll blow your items away. It's like, no, stop!
Yeah, but you can...
Tulin,
yeah,
why?
You can just freeze enemies, and he'll blow them off an edge.
Yeah, there's also that. But, yeah.
I mean, basically me, it's like, you know... Yeah, but have you gotten all the Sage Wills yet? Because you can actually power up the Sages.
No, I've gotten some Sage Wills. I never even used a single one of them. I should have, but I was very indecisive. Like, I don't know which one I want to power up. So I didn't power up any of them. That's just me in a nutshell. I don't know what I'll use this thing for, so I guess I'm never using it.
Yeah.
It'll just sit here unused forever.
But to me, I mean, this game is so good. I don't know if people think I'm just exaggerating, but if you didn't have a Switch, I'd say if you were going to buy a Switch just to play this game, it's worth the $350 it costs to do all that. It's that good.
The thing is that, I don't know, I feel like Nintendo's got to be really close to announcing the second Switch. That's the thing.
Yeah, I think this is a once-in-a-lifetime game, though. Like, I don't think we'll ever see something quite of this caliber. It's like the Infinity War thing, like once...
Avengers,
it's just
Endgame.
All the right things coming, the right budget, the right time spent, everything, perfect vision. It was just something.
I mean,
they
had the game ready for like a year, and they just spent 1 year polishing it up.
It shows.
Yeah.
It shows.
And I find it interesting because there's a lot of people, there was a big discourse online about how like, well, most studios can't afford to do that. And I was like, well, maybe they should budget better. Like, I don't know what to tell you, but games should come out polished. It shouldn't be acceptable that, like, again, to give the example, it shouldn't be acceptable that games come out like Wild Hearts and Jedi Survivor. This is not an acceptable thing. I don't understand why people are like, well, yeah, not every studio can afford to polish up their games. It's like, well, they need to fucking budget better then. I don't know what to tell you. It's like, imagine I put up a video and it doesn't have any audio. And I'm like, it's okay. I'll send you guys the audio tomorrow. Just enjoy the video as it is right now. It's like, what the fuck do you mean? It's like, it doesn't work like that.
The Bank of Nintendo has power.
It's like, no, yeah.
But yeah, that
of
was,
course.
That was fun. And I wonder what if they don't have Switch backwards compatibility on the next system, then it's going to be a shit show.
Bro, that's me putting up clown makeup because I've bought so many Switch games over the last couple of months. So it's like if there's no backwards compatibility, you might as well just stick a clown right in my face. Just glue it in there. Like, yep, that's me. Probably wondering why I look like the Joker right now, but thanks.
Yeah.
So another game that we've played this week as well. I didn't do the combat thing, so I don't want any spoilers on that.
I won't talk about it, even though it kills me not to. I will not talk about it.
Yeah, but and also to avoid spoilers for everyone, but it's just like, listen, guys, 16?
FF16, guys.
Final Fantasy 16 is just so good. It is so amazing. However, it does have frame rate issues, which kind of sucks. As frame rate issues, and that is very frustrating. But everything else, I loved the story. I loved the visuals. I loved the combat. I loved everything. And I know that a lot of people are like, oh, but turn-based and all of these other things. And I understand it can be frustrating if you're like somebody who only played turn-based Final Fantasies and you jump into this and it's Final Fantasy May Cry. And it's like, I get it. But, like, the game is so goddamn good, I'm sorry. It's like, it is what it is.
But they do give a lot of twerky little tools to tweak it so that it, you know, if it's too fast, too weird, or whatever, you can tweak it to make it a little bit easier to get through it, so...
Yeah, I didn't try out any of, the amulets or whatever.
Yeah, but it's I love the idea that they did. Like, if it's just, like, I just don't have good reaction time, I have carpal tunnel, my fingers are slower... Okay, we can cover that. Everything else will be the same. We won't change it if you don't want it. And it's like you decide your level of difficulty, and it's by default, it's giving you their intended difficulty, and you can change it at any time in any way you want, basically, with those accessories. I think that's super smart. But did you try it on frame rate priority or just graphics?
That's the only way that I played it. I played it in performance mode. I think I might try graphics at some point just to see what that's like, because like I said, there some situations where it did get a little bit framey. I don't know if that's like fixed in the final version, because they said it's already gold and it doesn't have a day one patch, so I don't know.
That's weird, because we played only in graphics, and yeah, there's a few areas where the frame rate suffers, but the action is always great. Like
you guys didn't play in frame rate mode?
No, we thought it was too much of a sacrifice from the visual fidelity. The textures are just much worse. Like, it looks really good in graphics, and
I gotta try out the graphics mode then, see if that feels better. But it's like, that's actually something that I'm not a huge fan of nowadays. I'm beginning to get more and more annoyed by it. The whole thing about like,
it's a compromise, right?
Yeah, it's like I don't want this. I want you to figure out, does your game need to run at 30 FPS or does it need to run at 60? What is the most important thing for you as a developer? And then pick your frame rate and optimize the crap out of it for that frame rate, instead of like, oh, here's the 30 FPS mode, here's the 60 FPS mode.
Yes, but if they over-optimize for frame rates, then you're going to get Bloodborne, which is hard locked to 30. You'll never get it to 60, no matter what hardware you play it on. Because they optimize the shit out of it for 30.
It's a PlayStation exclusive. I don't care. I'm going to play it on the PlayStation. It's like, yeah. I do get it. Like, if they optimize, I don't think that it's a good thing that your animations are tied to the frame rate. I don't think that that's necessarily.
I know what you're saying,
thing,
though.
I agree with you, that they should optimize for frame rate. So, like, it was actually kind of refreshing when I was, I've been playing Diablo 4, and I was like, okay, so let's go pick performance mode or whatever. It's like, no, there is no performance mode. There's no quality mode. There's
mode.
The game. You play the game. And it's like, look, if I want to tweet around with all these settings and figure out, it's like, I'll play on PC, and in there I'll be like, okay, I need to drop the shadows down, I need to drop the anti-aliasing down, let me check if this post-processing, and I know all the settings that I need to mess around with. But it's like, that's what I'll do if I'm on PC. If I'm on console, I want mega dumbed down mode. I don't want any of these options. I want nothing. I want you to figure it out and then give me the final product. That's like some, I don't know if you saw the Xbox showcase, because they've been talking about Starfield and whatnot, and Starfield's apparently only going to have 30 FPS when they release the game. It's only gonna, as a matter of fact, that's just their design. It's just like, no, this is gonna be 30 FPS is whatever. And I'm like, you know what? It's better like this than to have like a half-assed performance mode that runs like, because what ends up happening in a lot of situations is, okay, here's the 30, here's the 60, and they both run like ass.
Yeah.
And it's just like, no, just optimize one. Just do one thing right as opposed to doing two things wrong. Just get one thing right.
I really want you to play that demo in graphics, though, because we were blown away. And you were saying it was pretty, but like, I want to see what you think now when you put it on graphics. I don't think it's worth the sacrifice. I think it's way too damn pretty, and there's not as much of a difference to me, at least.
And here's the thing. The only reason why I would consider putting it in graphics mode is precisely because the performance mode is not as stable as I would like it to be. See, there you go. Whereas, like, if they had done just like, if I was able to go into performance mode.
It's going to be a little unstable anyways.
Yeah, but it's like, if I was able to do it performance mode, solid 60, I'd be like, yep, this is what I'm playing, solid 60. I don't even care. But if the moment it's like, well, I'm playing in performance mode, but it dips below 40, why? Like, I don't need that. In that case, I'll just play at 30. I don't care. It's like, I don't know. It's a weird thing. But yeah, I'll check it in graphics mode. I definitely enjoyed the visuals, though. I think the game looks
so
great.
Good,
even in performance
mode. Voice acting,
mode,
fantastic.
I think it looks great. Yeah, the
music,
voice acting,
fantastic.
Gorgeous.
Everything fantastic.
The music was blowing me away. It's so good. It's so freaking good.
Soken is the shit. I can't wait for the mass media to finally experience Soken Unleashed. It's going to be nice. It's a different flavor, but it's him. And I love his music.
100%. Like every time that the... Because the thing about it is, and this is interesting because, like I said, I've been playing Diablo 4, and here's a very interesting thing. The soundtrack of Diablo 4 is also very good. It's not a level of Soken and 16, nowhere close to that, but it's also pretty good. And one of the things that I've noticed is they were very hesitant to put the soundtrack in the foreground. And that, I think, is what the Creative Business Unit 3 does, is they're not afraid to put the soundtrack in the foreground.
Yeah.
Most games, they'll relegate the soundtrack to the background. And ambient, a lot of times people even forget the soundtrack is there because it's just so muted, yeah. right? And you look at something like 16 and they're like, no, here comes the soundtrack roaring in. And it's like, yes, that's exactly what I want. And, you know, in Diablo 4, for instance, I had to like manually mix the audio because I could barely hear the soundtrack over the sound effects of me killing things. I was like, yeah, how does this make sense?
I don't know if people know this, but in FF14, there's a fun phrase that everyone uses, which is, we're just playing this, you know, a musical soundtrack by Soken, and there just happens to be gameplay that comes with it as a freebie. We're just playing through like a music video of his, like, and it's just, you know, it's amazing. And I think that's also where you feel the Uematsu influence is they're not afraid to embrace melody, where most of the stuff in most games and movies is very harmonic and ambient. Like, they really put melodies to stuff. So when you think of a character or a town, like, there is a melody, a strong one. And man, are they good. But and this, I loved watching the 5-hour stream they did, and Soken was trying to explain. He showed a small example. I noticed it right away, but he's creating these songs so that he has like a measure or two inside each one of the parts that can, if need be, the program can decide to loop that measure a few times until the player hits the point where it should transition to the chorus. And so they it's controlled by the program to make sure that everyone gets the high point of the music at the high point of what they're doing.
I remember when they were talking about for instance, patch 5.3 and 14, and how he was doing the small adjustments when he was in the hospital to make sure that the notes were hitting at the right moments of the fight. And it's just like, dude, that's just good, such good attention to detail.
I'd say half the storytelling is the music for that team. Like, they put so much effort into it.
It's really interesting that I think, like, if you were to look at videos of me like 10 years ago, whenever I would talk about certain games, I would always be talking about how important it is for a game to have dynamic music. And back then, there were still most games just like, music super passive, it's whatever. And I was like, no, when I get into combat, the music changes. Whenever one game would do that, I'm like, see, this is the way to do it. I get into combat, the music changes. It changes the combat music. It needs to be dynamic. That's
then
the
you
thing.
Get. It's crazy. We're going to get this bombastic, you know, Hollywood blockbuster type of like, hold on to your damn seat, the roller coaster is going off game, which is FF16. And that was their design idea, was like, we're going hard, baby. Just throw it all, like, whatever, anything goes. No plot armor, whatever. Just go, go, go. But at the same time, you got something like Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom. That soundtrack is insanely good. And it's funny because you play, and some people go, what soundtrack? There's no music playing. Oh yeah, there is.
The thing about Zelda that I felt is that the soundtrack is very backloaded. So like you get a little bit of it at the beginning, and then in the middle section of the game it goes back to being super muted, and then when you get to the end they just go all out with it, and that's when you're like, damn, there are some really freaking bangers in here. You should have done more of that throughout the game. Should have been spread out a little bit more. But yeah.
So the way I think of that is the gameplay is like 90% and the secret spice is the music. Because it alludes to little hints, things that are going on. Little things that are just subconsciously telling you about your environment. It's so smart, the sound design.
Yeah.
At least more the sound design than the soundtrack probably, but...
But I prefer the approach that they do in 16. It's just like, give me the bangers, like right there, boom, big moment. Here's what's happening. Here's the music that's gonna go with it, and it's just so friggin'.
I don't know about you, but I am not carrying over my save data when I get the game. Like, I'm gonna go straight.
Oh no, I'm gonna go from the start again as well. Yeah, I've said as much. I'm gonna replay the start. I'm probably going to be streaming the whole thing because I was thinking, do I want to do like traditional LP, do I want to stream it? My biggest concern, as usual, is spoilers. Like
the grindings and spoilers. Oh, God,
grinding,
spoilers.
Grinding is not a problem because I can grind off stream. Like, if I see that there's something.
Yeah, but this is a story game. Yeah, you don't want something spoiled. Like, even watching your stream of you playing the demo, my butt cheeks were clenched as I was like, chat, don't like, or just doing my mod job and waiting so I can try to kill something. Like, it's like, don't say it before he sees it, you know, and don't elude like, oh, everybody be quiet, Chad. It's like, if you say that, like something's behind
really
that door.
People get really excited about it. It's just something special. But I'm hoping that people take the same approach that 14 did, where the community pretty much polices itself and prevents people from spoiling stuff most of the time. So, that's the curse of the streamer, you know. It's like, but I do plan on streaming that one the whole way, because I don't think it's going to be something where I'm going to need to, like, for instance, when you're talking about Tears of the Kingdom, there's a lot of systems that you need to learn and a lot of things that you need to experiment with that are not fun to do in a stream.
To watch,
I don't think that's going to be the case with 16. Just like, and here's another interesting thing, and this is something that even Chaos Theory brought up on Twitter the other day. The combat of Final Fantasy 16 is basically poke shelling. Because it is. It's like attack, shell, attack, shell. It's so good. I loved it when I was going through that. That was really good.
Yeah, the way I was playing was very different from how you were playing it, and the way that Yuna played it was very, very different from the way I did.
And this is just like a very limited version of the combat.
She wasn't even that interested so much in the game. I think she's like, okay, I'll pay attention to it a little bit because it's the team that does 14 and she loves 14. Yeah. But then I put on the demo and she played it and she's like, oh, this is good.
Oh, yeah.
She got in the comment and she's like, okay. She's like, you need to buy yourself a PS5.
Because this one's mine.
I'm like, yeah.
You need to get one for yourself.
It's so good. There's no way we're sharing the same Clive. We're not going to raise him the same way. We're not going to find him the same way. She wants to play in Japanese, which the voice acting is fantastic. I want to play in English, which is also fantastic. So it's like, yep, so I, the Sony hater that I am, and I really don't like the company and what they do most of the time, here I am buying a second PS5. It's like I said, like, I put my money where my mouth is. I play games, not systems, right? So
yeah, I agree. Like, I'm even like, in a way, I'm thinking, do I want to play Starfield on PC? Because I'm going to play Starfield as well. It's like, I almost want to get an Xbox just to play Starfield. But yeah, I don't know if that's the case. But getting back to 16, like,
I got to thank you, though.
Why?
I would have never even tried this game if it wasn't for you.
Oh, 16, yeah, right.
Because think about it.
You
are
done with Final Fantasy.
I have been done with that brand since FF10. Like, beyond that, I have not enjoyed the series, the direction it took, the storytelling method. I'm just not a fan.
It's great just, business.
You know, it is what it is, right? But then you convinced me to get into 14. It resonates with me hardcore.
Don't say that. You can't keep saying that. Like, okay, the community's gonna jump after me. Say, look at what you've done. Look at what you did.
Nah,
people are still mad at me.
This is a treasured life experience. I'm really happy. So, So I'm only trying 16 because it's the same team.
Yep.
And holy crap!
That's the main reason why I'm going for 16 as well. Is because
I just love coming back. Yoshi do his mic drop and just he's like, I'm out. He's like, I don't know what they're doing with 17 or 18 or 19. He's like, he's not even thinking about it.
Yep.
I think he wants to make something new, and he wants to continue on 14. And he's like, look, I did you guys a solid. I used up a lot of money, but I made an awesome game.
The thing with Yoshi P was that you always wanted to make, at least that's the vibe I get, you always wanted to make a mainline entry to Final Fantasy.
Once.
And a lot of fans don't consider 14 to be a mainline entry. They consider
so
it
I
to
hope
be
people
whatever. Even though it is
go,
a numbered
I'll check
entry,
out 14.
Yeah, but it's like now he's done both. He's done the MMO and he's done 16. I think he's done with Final Fantasy after that, right? I mean, he's going to continue to do 14, is what I'm saying. But I don't think.
But I think he wants to try something new after that if he's going to do anything.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be like, oh yeah, I can't wait to do Final Fantasy 17. You guys.
No. But he's talking about that in interviews passively. Like, I don't know what they're going to do with the future of the series, but that's up to them.
Yeah.
Like, he's already washing his hands saying,
like
look, I just killed myself to make this game. I'm done.
I think that even though that is happening, most likely the rest of the people over at Square is like, well, what do you mean? You have to do 17. What do you mean?
No.
You're a game director. You direct the games. You have to direct the 17 game. And he's like,
they
nope,
can't tell him what to do.
I can do what I want. I'm not doing that. My team's going to do other things. We're going to do greater things. You'll see. We'll make the series that kills Final Fantasy.
It just shows how much good management can affect an entire production, right? Like how much a producer and director could do, because he's not the one making all these assets himself. He's checking it and he's giving them general direction, but he's running how they go about it, right? That's why I like how they, you know, he's both the director and producer, is because he's deciding how they go about doing it, because these games would not be made by other directors in the same way, and they wouldn't get to the same level of polish. No. So it's crazy. I would love for him to one day retire maybe from making games and just start doing seminars about how to project manage, because I want to get inside his head. I want to know what he knows, because
the way that he is able to motivate his team, like you can tell it's one of those things that you play a game and you can tell whether or not a team is passionate about it, and 16 is definitely one of those. It is definitely one of those.
So we're going to be eating good. That comes out next Thursday, so I'll get my new PlayStation coming in on the same day, which will be nice. Got a new gaming PC coming in this weekend because the other Warrior of Light in the house has now taken a hold of my gaming rig. So
she's like, you're not.
It feels
worthy.
Like a. It feels good. It's like the passing of the torch.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're not.
I'll still get
the
latest and greatest, even though I'm not. I suck. My gaming rig was actually pretty beefy, you know, for the day. It's still really good, especially for FF14,
which is what you play the most. How's the Savage World treating you?
It's rough, I'll be honest, but it's fun. Like, we did P9, we cleared that. P10, we cleared it. Now we're trying to help the Static get up to their P10 clear. So we made the mistake
of
overprogging
on
our own.
You cleared it on Party Finder before the Static. Yeah. Jesus Christ, that's too many.
Well, the thing
hours.
Is we put in, you know, like 35 hours on Party Finder. And for the majority of it, we were playing perfect. We know the whole fight. It's just, it's a roulette, seeing if you can get people at the same level. And that's not to sound like elitist or anything. It's a puzzle game. So if one person is not that far in the fight, everyone dies. So it's like, you're rolling a roulette because someone says, yeah, I've been to the end. And you're like, great. And then you find out, they're like, wait, well, what comes after this? And you're like, dude, I thought you've seen this fight.
You said you've seen Enrage. You haven't seen Enrage? Uh-oh.
Yeah, if you trip, we all die. And that's what makes it exciting, right? Because it's a group effort. There's no carrying, so to say. You have to execute your mechanics. So we're having fun. We should. The Stack experience is, the most stressful part of it is just in real life stuff coming up, you know, because you can't help it. So, like, you know, someone can't make it one day because something came up, or you lose a member because something came up. But you know, you wish them the best, and you have to find a new replacement. But because you already started the marathon, you're like at the front going, hey, is there anybody who hasn't started this marathon and want to join us midway? And it's like cricket sounds, right? So
the thing about my previous Savage raiding experience is that the way that they're designing Savage raids nowadays, it's like, in order for you to really succeed, 14 has to be your one game. Like you said, you put in 35 hours progging on party.
All
fun,
eight
I'm like,
people have to know it. Really,
I'm not putting 35 hours progging a fight on Party Finder. I'm not doing that. I'm not willing to do that. And so that pretty much kind of like excludes me from Savage raiding.
Yeah, this tier is harder for some, not mechanically, but for some reason, Party Finder is struggling more with it than last year. So I think you made the right choice, but we're going to continue to have fun with it. We'll make sure not to drive ourselves crazy.
Yeah, because it can get very easy to drive yourself crazy.
Oh, yeah.
I have been
grinding. But I'm really happy
patch,
we have
though,
a static.
So.
Which is nice to have a static because it's like 3 hours, three times a week. And it's just, it's friends getting together to.
I was doing 2 hours, three times a week, and that felt like too much.
Oh, wow. Yeah, for me, three is like lazy. Like, I feel like that's a third of the time I want.
Jesus Christ, you're going way too hardcore into raiding.
It's fine. But yeah, life is good. There's lots of good games, but I'm going to be dedicating a lot of time to 16 once it comes out. And that's, I mean, when I hear like, oh, the main story is 45 to 50 hours, I'm like, that's like a week.
I mean,
I'm going to take my time with it.
Yeah, I'm going to take my sweet time. I'm going to explore all of the side quests. I want to read... I want to read all of those ATL entries that they got.
Oh, my God. Every game needs to do something like that. That is such a cool feature.
The thing was, I thought that was going to be like a glossary that was available at any time, but it's like, no, it's only when it's relevant. So it's like, you need to see it.
It's literally like having a lore dude.
Yeah.
Like your bro who knows all the lore is sitting on the couch next to you, and you pause a cutscene. He's like, wait, who's that? What's going on? And they just tell you only what you need to know. And you're like, and it's okay, cool.
It's funny because basically when I was first playing through 14, Twitch chat was my ATL because I would be like, oh, I don't remember this character. Who's this guy? And they'd be like, oh, it's this guy that helped you out at that one time. I was like, ah, okay, that guy. Okay, cool. Let's go.
Yeah, because you want to know that stuff going into it. You don't want to have to look it up after. So that's a smart feature. I really like it.
I agree.
But that had to been a big undertaking because as scenario changes and everything, like, constantly looking back, making sure that you've got only the pertinent information that's been
One of the things that I was complaining about is I feel like the ATL thing should be available in the map, which it's not. I think the map would be one of the best times to look at.
I think
the
it
ATL
would be impossible because like the way they designed it was they're looking at each situation as it specifically unfolds, who's in that scene, should you know up to that point. And in the world map, it's like, you could be on the world map at any point in the game. Trying to manage that would be impossible.
I wanted my thing was like when I first got to that mission that they send you off to go into the swamp to kill goblins, I was just like, oh, now I want to very quickly check the ATL because I want to see about those Iron Blood dudes and whatnot. And it's like, nope, wrong time. Now we tell you about the goblins and the thing.
There's going to be an NPC for that though.
Yeah. I've heard so you can check,
and I like that the NPC will not only recap everything but also go in deeper for you.
Yeah.
So that's cool to have.
You know what Kotaku thought of this feature?
Oh God. What?
They wrote an article of something like the story is so convoluted that the developers had to put in a special feature.
Oh Jesus.
No, wait. What was the they said something, they said not even the developers could follow the story of Final Fantasy 16. That's what they said. They made an article.
That's so Kotaku.
What a joke, dude. I'm sorry, Kotaku. You guys got to take a little jabbing every now and then. Because you guys say the dumbest shit.
Oh my God. They're probably the ones that said that Jozo was hinting that Monster Hunter 6 was coming out of Tokyo Game Show. Wouldn't surprise me.
Oh man.
How far can you fall from grace is the social experiment we're witnessing with Kotaku.
Jesus Christ. But yeah. Life's good.
Being good.
Final Fantasy 16 coming out next week. And that is going to be it for us, guys. If you guys enjoyed the show, hit the like button, subscribe, bell notification icon, all of that jazz. Thank you all very much for watching. We'll see you guys in the next one. Stay strong, stay safe.
And happy hunting.